We were encouraged to make this a formal presentation, but this is the best we could do.
So, there I stood at the counter in the front office at the middle school where I was teaching, talking to the secretaries before school. From his office comes the assistant principal, Walter Lancaster, who says hello and bustles out the front door and gets ready for bus duty. I say to the secretaries, I would love to have a man like Walter. He is confident, caring, educated, and loyal towards his family with a good sense of humor. Little did I know that they clocked this conversation and used it to get us together 3 years later. In those 3 years, I dated here and there, and Walter became divorced. The secretaries saw their chance. They arranged a ski day for the six of us, five women and Walter, to go skiing at Big Bear. Neither Walt nor I knew it was a setup, but it worked. We began dating. I started taking scuba class from him at the university. Probably several of you have as well. With me, he attended rehearsals for plays that I was in. From my point of view, if things didn't work out, at least I would become a certified scuba diver. From his viewpoint, he got to see plays for free. 6 months later, I was a certified scuba diver, and Walter was becoming a viable theater critic. 6 months after that, we got married. Sounds like a fairy tale, right? Well, does anything really work out immediately in a fairy tale? No. You gotta have conflict, right? There has to be conflict to make it a worthwhile story.
I was a Mississippian, a person from the deep South. My father, a Mississippi man, married a Louisiana woman. Maybe some of you have even heard that song.
I am from Florida, but I claim Pennsylvania because all of my family is from back there, so technically I'm a northerner.
I was divorced.
I had never been married.
I had three children.
I had none.
I was a brother with five sisters with plenty of sibling rivalry.
I was an only child with no rivals.
I was an assistant principal.
I was a teacher at our school. Awkward, right?
I was a Seventh-day Adventist.
I was Catholic.
We had more than enough conflicts for one fairy tale story. It was then that we realized that God had great sense of humor. Getting married was a challenge, but we began to find God's grace in many areas of our lives. I was divorced and couldn't get married in Karen's Catholic Church without a lot of rigmarole. 37 years ago, Adventist pastors confronted with people of different faiths seeking to marry were between a rock and a hard place with no way out. So we prayed, and God provided an answer. We were able to get married in the Riverside Community Church at Christmas time. We had Karen's Catholic priest friend read a Bible text, an Adventist pastor friend of mine perform a blessing, and a Baptist minister whose wife was a friend to both of us, the actual wedding ceremony. It took a total of three pastors to get this marriage off to a rip-roaring start.
Walt's family welcomed me with open arms, though they were worried about my Catholicism. How would that fit in with Walter and his beliefs? But I never got the feeling that they weren't accepting me nor judging me. At the wedding reception, the Seventh-day Adventist side danced. His sisters and their accompanying spouses, just like the rest of the wedding guests. Did I know Adventists weren't particularly known for dancing? I don't think we ever spoke about it, so nope. It never came up. We had the DJ, there it was. They just got up and did it. They got up, rose to the dance floor without a grimace that I saw or a sour word that I heard. They were genial and friendly, extending God's grace without me even realizing it.
That's how Karen began the journey to become a member of the La Sierra University Church. Here's how I got here. My father died of a heart attack in Mississippi when I was 13. Before he passed, my father, Walter Wyman Lancaster, the senior, was planning to move our family to California because he knew the educational environment would be best for the children who remained at home. Plus, I had a sister in nursing school here at Loma Linda University, which was College of Medical Evangelists at the time. My sisters Irma, Gwen, and I, who remained at home. So upon the death of my father, my mother, Effie Lancaster, moved our family to the La Sierra area of California, along with our kleptomaniac dog, Pogo. The dog with bad breath, who had a penchant for stealing dog food and dishes in the neighborhood. As we traveled across the country, my mother was not thrilled with Pogo's breathing down her neck. So she ended up using her toothbrush to brush his teeth. It did not go well. We dared not ask my mother what she brushed her teeth with afterward. After a few Moses-type moves around La Sierra, my mother purchased a house on Sierra Vista Avenue, just up the road from here, where my younger sister, Gwen, and I attended La Sierra Academy, and my older sister, Irma, attended La Sierra College. The Adventist education that my father so admired and hoped his children would benefit from was achieved by four of his six children. Sadly, I've lost two of my sisters, but I am still bossed around by the remaining older two, Betty and Irma. One of them still calls me son. I trot a bross around my youngest sister, Gwen, up in Walla Walla, but she just laughs.
As all fairy tales go, there can enter in more struggles. Walt and I were in Florida on a vacation. I was 7 months pregnant with our first child, and we got a phone call that my mother had passed unexpectedly. We flew home immediately. Fortunately, my best friend Kelly and Walter's mother were there to comfort me, and my father. Our son was born in November, and as my newly widowed father and I spoke daily, I called him on Christmas morning, 1990. My son was a month old. My father didn't answer the phone. My mother had passed in late August, and he was alone for 4 months. I dashed over and found my father on the floor of the kitchen, breathing heavily. I called 911, and he was rushed to the hospital. He had had a stroke. He never regained his speech or mobility, and he died 2 months after the stroke. I believe he died of a broken heart, since he and my mother had been together almost 50 years. I felt like an orphan. Remember, only child. Sometimes tragedies beget blessings, and Walt's mother became my mother, and his sisters became my sisters. The Lancaster family played a big part of me becoming a member of this church. More than being a Seventh-day Adventist, Walter was a Christian first. As a Catholic, I wholeheartedly considered myself a Christian, but I loved the rituals and the deep meanings within the Catholic Church.
To compromise between our differing places of worship, we vacillated between La Sierra University Church and Karen's church. It wasn't too difficult until Karen and I had children of our own. We had three children in 5 years, Michael, Elizabeth, and Sarah. Three children under five, plus children Julianne, Wyman, and Lindsay. We did go to both churches, but it became a time management nightmare with our three young children. We decided that because of the children's Sabbath schools, we made La Sierra University Church our home. On our 10th anniversary, Karen surprised me with her baptism by Pastor Chris Oberg after studying with Pastor Dan Smith as I sat right there. I have attended La Sierra University Church off and on since 1958. You can figure the math on that one. And have been a part of the community for those years. 5 of my 6 children went to La Sierra Academy. 2 children graduated from La Sierra University. And two grandchildren are graduates as well. After retiring from the public school system after 42 years, I was hired as a principal at La Sierra Academy and served there 9 years. Attending La Sierra University Church has been an enormous blessing. The pastoral staff over the 37 years we have attended together have been unsurpassed. Karen was asked by Pastor Chris to teach Sabbath school, and now she and I have begun teaching primary 2 thanks to Pastor Elizabeth. We are active every summer with VBS, Vacation Bible School, as well. Pastor Devo, in his infinite wisdom, got us and our teen children involved with the audiovisual team about 22 years ago and hasn't released us yet. We are still part of that service. Pastor Dan and I have been on overseas mission trip adventures several times. One of the things that we have endeavored to do when we first got married was to renew our vows. So we have been trying to do that every 10 years. Here we are at Big Bear at a wedding chapel with 5 of our children. The second vow renewal took place at the Little White Wedding Chapel in Las Vegas, made famous by a number of celebrities such as Frank Sinatra and Britney Spears, and now the Lancasters. Our recent vow renewal involved Pastor Dan helping us renew them underwater in scuba gear in the La Sierra University pool. One very cold, very cold evening in December. Because I had been teaching there, I expected the pool to be warm. We did not know that weeks prior to this, that the pool heater had been turned off for the winter break. Pastor Raywin has nabbed us for her social committee, where we try to make ourselves useful or useless as possible. We're holding our breath now, hoping Pastors Icky and Ben do not hear this, but they may eventually concoct a volunteer assignment for us.
We're blessed to have a large extended family and like to gather whenever we can. This was for Walt's 80th birthday party. Oh, sorry, I spilled some beans there. Both of us have settled in here. Walt a lot longer than I have. But La Sierra University Church has become like a second home. Although thankfully nobody expects us to vacuum or mow the grass here. Family homes are where we gather around a table, share meals, tell stories, celebrate birthdays, and debate who's telling the story the right way. Here at church, we gather around the communion table and around potluck tables, where the food is good and the conversation lively. Somehow, there's food enough for everyone. Thank you, Coral. And enough desserts to test even the strongest self-control. Home is where you can show up just as you are, where people know your story, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's what this church has been for us. It's where we can show up as we are. It's where we've been encouraged and challenged, where we've been confronted with the gospel and grown in faith. We've found people who have celebrated with us, prayed for us, and prayed with us.
After 37 years, we've realized that home, wherever it is the place where people know your name, save you a seat at the potluck, ask about your family, and remind you that God's grace is often experienced through ordinary people doing ordinary things with extraordinary kindness. That's what La Sierra University Church has been for Karen and me, a place that truly feels like home.
Leave that to them. Yeah, I'll take it. Thank you, guys.
Will you stand with me for the reading of the word? You are no longer strangers or foreigners, but fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's household. The word of God. You may be seated. One of the beautiful things that I love about this series every year is that we get to hear stories from our congregation. Stories like Karen and Walt reminding us that every single person sitting in these pews have chapters of life that they have lived even before we've met them. We often meet, especially as pastors, we often meet people after some parts of their story have already settled. We don't necessarily always see the grief, we don't see the questions, and we don't always see the things that make life what it is today. Karen and Walt's story today is a simple reminder that family is where you are. Karen and Walt's story today isn't necessarily just about marriage, but it's about a journey of two different histories, two different traditions, and two different losses. Becoming one family, which interestingly enough is what is found in our key verse for today. Paul is talking about Ephesians 2 is coming together as one family, not just strangers, not just people we may know, but one family. When Paul is writing to the Ephesians, it's easy for us to quickly read through this message, and say, we already know what this verse is all about. We've heard it in devotionals, we've heard it in sermons, we've heard it so many times. But this morning, I want us to slow down a little bit, to pause, and to really think what this verse means for us here today. You are no longer strangers, you are no longer foreigners, but you are members of God's house. If we really slow down here, Paul is doing something really, really beautiful. He isn't simply making one statement, he is taking us along on a journey. Paul starts these verses out by saying, "You are no longer strangers." This phrase was very well known in my family. My dad would talk to everyone. My dad said, "You don't know a stranger." And that was a conflict because my mom said strangers are dangers. So I was a little confused as a kid, but my dad said every stranger can be a friend. So I really relate to this text a lot. You see, the word that Paul uses here is exono, which in the Greek is where we get this other phrase. It doesn't simply mean somebody you don't know. It actually describes somebody so much deeper. It describes somebody who is perceived as an outsider, somebody who doesn't quite belong, somebody who is viewed with suspicion simply because they're different than you. This type of person is always wondering if they will truly fit in. And maybe you felt like this before. I remember walking into high school for the first day. Our high school was a little bit different than it is here at La Sierra, where the campus of elementary and high school and middle school are all together on one. Growing up, I had to go to a whole new town, a whole new building of people that I didn't know. And so when I walked into high school, I felt like this. I felt like an outsider, wondering, will I belong? Maybe you felt this way as well, walking into a church, walking into a classroom, or maybe a place of work, or even, dare I say, a family gathering, wondering, do I really belong here? Paul begins with these people because he says to them, you are no longer who you are. You no longer take this title as stranger. And then Paul takes a little bit of a step forward and he says, you are also no longer foreigners. The Greek word for this also dives us a little bit deeper in saying that this word describes somebody who lives beside a house, knows all of the people who are in the house, lives close enough to see what is happening. They hear the laughter, they hear the dinner table, they hear the conversations, they know the people inside of the house, but they never quite get invited to come in. They're close to the home, but not in the home. It's the people who may attend, who volunteer, who sing songs. They know everyone's name. They serve in different committees. And yet deep inside their heart, they wonder, if people really knew my story, if they knew my questions that I have, if they knew how my marriage was doing, if they knew my identity, if they knew my doubts, would I truly still belong part of this community? And Paul looks at these people and says, you are no longer living outside of the house. Come in. Lastly, Paul finishes this segment by saying, he moves a little bit closer and he says, you are also fellow citizens. In the Roman world, citizenship wasn't just about where you lived. It determined something so much more than that. It determined your rights, your protections, your inheritance, and your identity. And so to become a citizen meant that you had equal standing within the community. Paul is saying that God's family, there is no hierarchy. There is no second-class citizens. There is no priority seating or first class or anything like that. There is nothing that can separate us, nothing that can make one above the other. And I think often sometimes in our churches, we may hold secret hierarchies. Some are funny, like Veggie Links versus Big Franks. Some are Ranch on Haystacks. What? Or not? I think not. But also, some of these hierarchies are a little bit different as well. There may be, I'm Adventist and has been fourth generation Adventist, versus I'm brand new to Adventism and I just walked through the door. Some are, I've been married for 35 years, and some may be feeling like their marriage may not last the next few days. The hierarchy of I'm too young, or I'm too old, or I don't think I should serve in that area because I don't have kids, or I should serve in this area, or I make too many mistakes, I don't know enough about the Bible, that ministry is not for me, those people aren't for me. And we don't always say these things out loud, but quietly they become the categories in which we place each of our members into sometimes. This secret hierarchy secretly creates these divisions within a community that Paul is writing and says, this was meant to be one. And then just when you think Paul has reached the destination in which he is trying to get at, he changes the metaphor altogether. He says, listen, I want to move from politics to family. And he actually says, you are members of God's household. These are actually more intimate than the phrases, you are a citizen, because citizens share laws, right? Citizens share geographic locations, but families share tables and share life together. Citizens know your name sometimes, or at least the general gist of it, but families know your stories. And so you may be thinking this morning, why out of all of the verses in the Bible did I use this one for the Lancaster story? When I was reading through their story, I thought of how different they were. At the beginning of the sermon, you saw them on separate sides of the stage slowly come together. On paper, they were vastly different from different traditions, stories, experiences, and different times of things. But yet over time, they came together to create one family and one home. And that's exactly the visual that Paul is giving us today. Paul is saying, I want you to come from your different categories, maybe the categories that you have pushed or placed people into, and become one. And one of the things that really stood out to me here when I came to interview here at La Sierra University Church was watching the services online. I remember right before I came for my interview, I watched one of the services and Pastor Steve was up here and he shared the welcome statement that we have here at the La Sierra University Church. A welcome statement that ends with, "All are welcome here." You see, this community just doesn't say all are welcome here. This community shows up to prove that all are welcome here. And I've had the opportunity of witnessing that over the years. I'm sure that there are many times where we have fallen short or we have missed the mark at times, but I'm grateful for a community who says we want to continue to ensure that we stretch and learn and challenge ourselves to make sure that nobody is left behind. Because when we say all are welcome here, we don't just say it, we truly mean it. You see, Paul says, you are no longer foreigners, you are no longer strangers, you are fellow citizens, but more than that, you are part of God's family. Do you notice the progression that Paul takes us through? He says, you're outside the house, you're outsiders, you're near, you're included, but ultimately, you're home. You see, Jesus isn't building a church where everyone looks the same. It's centered around the building a family where everyone belongs. Growing up, there was a few different shows that my parents really loved watching in the peace and quiet of our house. Now, our household wasn't necessarily peace and quiet all of the times, but when these three shows came on, my parents were like, just give us a moment. One of those was Jeopardy at 7. My grandpa leaned into this tradition. My grandpa, you would call my grandpa at 7, he'd said, not now, and would hang up on you. Jeopardy at 7 for those 30 minutes. Antique Roadshow for my mom. And then lastly, CBS Sunday Morning. Now, I'm not a really big fan of any of these shows, to be quite honest, but one of the things that I loved about CBS Sunday Morning is that like the last 5 minutes of the show, they always have this really heartwarming story. They want to leave you on a good note for the week. And so a couple of weeks ago, I was scrolling on the internet and I saw the story that they had for the last portion of that week. And it was really heartwarming to me that I wanted to share with you today. It's about a 4-year-old boy named Roman who lived in a neighborhood in North Carolina. About a year earlier, his parents had separated, his dad had moved away, his grandparents lived on the other side of the state, and even though he was surrounded by houses in this neighborhood, his mom said that he felt incredibly lonely. Every day, Roman would stand outside his house and wave to every single person who drove by and say, "Hey!" Can you say that? "Hey!" So cute. Most people waved back and said, "Hey." Some stopped to say hello. One neighbor walked across the street and met him and said hello. And then he never stopped waving with him. Before long, other neighbors joined him in the area as well. Soon, neighbors who had barely known each other started attending Roman's soccer games, training him on at swim lessons, showing him up for his preschool events, and celebrating his birthday together. Roman's mom said that she realized the only people who she needed to invite to his birthday party were actually the neighbors, many of which who had become grandparents to him. One neighbor in the segment said, "Look what this little boy has built." Not look what he found, not look what happened, look what he's built. And that struck me because Roman didn't create the neighborhood. He moved into it. There was houses and sidewalks and trees and all of these different things. But there were also already people there too. But what was missing in that neighborhood was the relationship. They lived next to each other, but they weren't family yet. At the end of the segment, the show said, Roman lived in a neighborhood, but he needed a village. It took this little boy to make this neighborhood a family. And that's what Paul is describing here in this verse. Paul is saying, you are no longer strangers, you are no longer foreigners, but you are members of God's family. Notice that he didn't just say, you all moved into the neighborhood and said, hey, as you brought in the groceries. Paul isn't saying, you came to church on Sabbath and you talked with one another and then you left and you didn't see or talk to each other again until the following week. Paul isn't describing a community that just talks about being a community. He describes a family, that a household that does life together. A family who jumps into primary two and says, we will teach. A family who collects school supplies for the 925/05 and beyond and comes tonight at 6 p.m. to pack the backpacks. A family who rallies together around our new families, providing meals for them. A family who sits together for those who are sick to allow them to know that they're not alone. This is the family that Paul is describing, and this is the family that I see here at the La Sierra University Church. He says, you became family members at the same time you became a household. Karen and Walt's story reminds us this morning that on paper, we have every reason to become strangers. And yet over years, something has happened to create us as a family. And that's still our calling for us today as a church. Because we're living in a world that we're very good at building neighborhoods, but not always good at building villages. We know how to share our zip codes, but we don't always know how to share our lives and our stories. And maybe that's why Paul's words are so radical to us. Because Paul imagines a church where the walls that once separated people are no longer having the final word. And so perhaps this morning, the story is not simply, and the question is not simply, who was welcome here? Because we already know the answer as everyone is welcome here. The deeper question is, who still feels like they have to stand across the street wondering if somebody will wave at them? Friends, the church looks most like Jesus when we choose to have relationships over fear and hospitality over suspicion. We are at our best when we extend the table for everyone and not just wave across the street for those looking at us, but walk across the street and welcome them home.